episode 36 of the Ricky Henderson Podcast, the greatest of all podcasts, GOAP. Super glad to be joined by longtime friend and A's reporter, Casey Pratt. He's now the senior sports producer over at ABC 7, KGO. Casey, how you doing, man? You good?
Yeah, man. I was waiting.
I was waiting for this invite.
I even sent you the stone cold gift. Like, come on, man. What's going
on? I know
on
you here? You cyberbullied me into going on the pod. You and Jen. Yeah, you and Jen were like, come on. Why can't he make it happen? So I was thinking about bringing you out here, dude. I was thinking about it.
I had to force the issue. I had to come on here and represent.
Just like Cavill, you had to tighten the screws and put public pressure on me via Twitter. Mm-hmm. Doing a page out of Cavill's playbook. Casey, thank you so much, man. Really appreciate it. I think I first met you during like the 2012 season, somewhere around there. The Bernie Lean years. Before we get into all this super serious stadium stuff, how much fun was that era, like the Bernie Lean era, like Melvin's first, like 2012 to 2014, that little group? That was like a great group of A's teams right there, you know?
I mean, there's so many layers to what you just said. I could start with meeting you, because I always thought that what you did when I was on the beat was the way to go. And I couldn't do a lot of it because like I was stuck writing all the game stories. But the thing I admired the most about you is you were so creative. You would jump out there, like you'd get in the crowd, you'd find all the craziest viral stuff. Like you'd find all the funny jerseys, the crazy fan stuff. You'd be out in right field.
you'd be ready
to run in there and get that whipped cream when Reddick was about to do the pies. Like I saw you everywhere and I really respected that. So that's how we became friends and drawn to each other. But, you know, back to the Bernie Lean thing, like, like I was the first one that noticed it. And so I was the one that kind of went around and like talked to Jerry Blevins, I think was the first guy I talked to. And then I talked to Coco and all those other guys.
And it just blew up. Yeah.
And that story, like I wrote it, it was like a Sunday day game story. It was like, you know, the type of throwaway type day gamer you do. Yeah. And it just exploded.
Yeah.
It exploded. It went so viral. Like Yahoo picked it up. It was like, I think it was three or four most popular sports story on CSNBayArea.com that year.
That's crazy.
And it was funny because like it became so big, but it also got me in trouble at the same time. Cause like there's a pregame show where Brody, you know, kind of like coaxed me into doing the Bernie
on
TV. And then my bosses were like, you're getting too close to the team. And I'm like, this is my story. I came up with this.
It's harmless. It's harmless. Yeah.
And then ATM, you remember that guy that did the Bernie video? Not the original Bernie, but the other one. They wanted me to be in their music video. And then I got in trouble for that. And then they'd show it all the time at the Coliseum. So, like, it was funny because it was like one of my biggest successes, but also one of my biggest failures at the same time.
it's like your bosses like hated you, but everybody else loved you.
Yeah, exactly. It was one of those.
That's hilarious. Yeah, I mean, those teams were fun, dude. Like Cespedes. I was writing about the Home Run Derby. Like, I don't know, just having good memories about Cespedes. Good times, dude. Good times.
Dude, those were really fun teams, honestly. And that was my, like, my dream in life, honestly. The whole reason I got into this business was to be a beat writer for the Oakland A's. That was like all I ever wanted.
Yeah, same with me.
I got there, you know, by the time I was 30, and we had these fun teams. And then like we had that year where there was two champagne celebrations on back-to-back days against the Rangers. And it was an awesome time. I mean, it was a grind, but it was fun. It was just a good time to cover. It didn't feel like work, you know?
Yeah, because that was when MLB just started. I remember like a few days before the 2012 season, they started Cut 4. So that's when they sent me around with the camera and the cell phone. Like, all right, you're going to be like the eyes and the ears in the stadium. And that's how I got to meet a lot of these A's fans. Like, that's how I met like Anson and Jorge and all those guys out in the bleachers. And they're still out there. So it's fun. Like, all the security guards are still there. It's like the same. Everybody's still there, you know? So
no, it's really cool. And if any of them are listening to this, like, they're my absolute favorite. I love getting out there in right field and speaking out there, even when I was on the beat, and I'd see you out there, I'd be all jealous because I was stuck up in the press box. I wanted to yell where the action was, you know?
Yeah, that was fun. That was so much fun during that. I was a lot younger too. I had a lot more energy. I was just like always running around, you know? That was good times, dude. I was looking back at your LinkedIn. I saw, so were you doing concurrent jobs at ABC and CSN for like 10 years are like, I don't understand like how you were a sports producer at ABC since 06, but then you were doing CSN stuff since 09. So how did that work out?
Like, probably like just isn't correct. I don't know. I don't know. But you know, my career is weird. Like I mentioned, being a beat writer for the A's and that being all I really ever wanted to do. And obviously I pivoted a million different ways from there. We can get into that, but you know, I got started writing like on this little scout.com forum and actually shout out Melissa Lockhart. She was on there. And so,
OK Clubhouse. Was it that one?
Yeah. I was an intern at ABC7. And I kind of just worked my way up. Like I wouldn't leave. They'd all tell me to go home and I wouldn't. I just like learned everything I could possibly learn. You know, as a journalism major, I wanted to be a writer, but I kind of recognized TV was a little bit like more lucrative, I guess you could say. So I got an internship at ABC7 and I ended up becoming sports producer right out of my internship because I like learned so much and people happened to leave and I got lucky and kind of made my own luck at the same time. And it was crazy. So I was producing for KGO before I even graduated college. And
You're a Gator, right? You're a Golden Gator.
Yeah,
right?
SF State. Like as I was doing that, then the guy ahead of me left. And then I was like running the whole department and I was still in college. And so when CSN launched, I had just gotten passed over for like the main staff job at ABC7, which is like the role I was already in, except I wanted to make it like the real deal instead of just fill-in thing.
Get the title.
I got passed over. Yeah. I was mad about it. And I knew Mindy Bach, who you probably remember.
Yeah, of course. Mindy was always super nice. Yeah, Mindy's
and
great.
And she's like, you got to talk to this guy, Ted Griggs. Like, they're launching all this stuff at CSN. So I went over there, and I was basically one of the first people they interned as a producer there, and I got the job. So we launched CSN. So that's kind of how it started. I, like, went from intern, kind of weaseled my way into a sports producer job at ABC and then went and launched CSN, brand new, 2 HD studios, 2 networks all in the same day. And I was their main like A's producer.
That's awesome,
for the in-house stuff.
Yeah. So you went to San Francisco State. Are you a local guy? Are you from around here too? Where did you grow up? Like, were you growing up going to A's games? When did the A's like become a part of your life, I guess?
I was going to A's games since I was 1 year old. My dad was a season ticket holder. Actually, I just was tweeting about this the other day, but I was at the game before, the game during, and the game after Jose Canseco got traded. And he was like my all-time favorite A's player at the time. So that was like heartbreaking for me as a kid. So I grew up in Danville and live in the East Bay and went to a ton of A's games. So that's kind of, it was just always been a part of my life as a kid growing up.
Yeah, I grew up in Moraga. I was a big T Long guy. T Long was my favorite player.
The sweetest swing, man. He had the sweetest left.
I know, like, A's fans remember him for striking out looking, like, to end the Red Sox series or whatever. And my friends still give me shit for that. Like, I did it. but yeah, I don't know. I remember he had some really funny commercial where he was like diving all over the place. And I was like, oh, I love this guy. This guy's great. that's funny. But yeah, I mean, San Francisco State, they pump out a lot of journalists, right? Especially in the local news market. There's a lot of Golden Gators out there, right? Like, is that a really solid program or what?
Dude, it's funny because I don't really know. Because I was a journalism major, which means like my whole focus was on print. And at SF State, the whole print focus is like news. So it's like, we're going to teach you how to write an obituary and we're going to teach you how to cover a local news beat. And I would go up to all my teachers and I'd say like, I don't want to do that. I just want to do sports. I want to do sports journalism. And we really didn't have anything for that on the journalism side. They have an incredible broadcast program, which I wasn't in and didn't overlap with journalism for some reason. So I didn't get to do all the fun sports stuff. And we didn't really have very good sports teams. So I kind of just did my own thing. A lot of my teachers were cool with it. And, you know, when I got my internship at ABC7, I helped a lot of the journalism students get internships there. So they were totally cool with me kind of doing my own thing. And they helped me out a lot, honestly, because I don't know if I would have graduated otherwise. Because I was just like, I don't want to do news. I just want sports.
Yeah, like all I want to do is sports. Yeah, that's funny. I mean, how much has TV changed in like the 15 years you've been in the field? You know, I mean, I look around now and I feel like YouTube creators are kind of popping up everywhere, and you know, like the live streaming capabilities are a lot better now there. Do you feel like YouTube will ever challenge TV? And I mean, what do you think about the dynamic of just, I mean, people like watching stuff, people still like watching stuff, but it's, I feel like the way it's happening is changing. So what do you think about YouTube, the challenge it presents to TV and stuff like that?
Well, I mean, look at us right now. What are we doing? We're sitting here on like webcams and laptops and ring lights, and I'm in my living room. This is all unimaginable when I got into this business. So you really look at that. You look at YouTube. I have young kids. I mean, they come home and all they want to do is watch YouTube. They don't even watch TV. We sit here and we watch all these shows on YouTube. And, you know, I think about that a lot. But the biggest kind of roadblock for that is live TV, live sports. Like, you look at, they're getting better at bringing on rights agreements and stuff. But, you know, I work for ABC. ABC is owned by Disney. Disney owns ESPN, and they spend billions of dollars for exclusive rights to these games. So it's kind of like there's a big wall against that whole like YouTube thing from a live standpoint, but it's the wave of the future. I mean, if you're not going to do it, you're not going to be here long. That's for sure.
Yeah. Cause I wonder if, I mean, maybe it's still a couple decades off, but eventually one of these sports leagues might like exclusively go streaming, you know, or something like that. I mean, that's probably like super, super far off, but I mean, who knows, dude? I mean,
when it's just money. I mean, it all comes down to the dollar, and, and there's billion big contracts with all the leagues right now. So, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that YouTube would have to break into. They can do YouTube TV, you know, like a TV carrier, and do the same stuff that, like, you know, Xfinity and all these other companies are doing. But for YouTube to kind of really truly own the whole market, they'd have to shell out big bucks.
Yeah, for sure. And if you go to your the A's just made it 2-0. We're also recording this Thursday morning, and the A's are in their series finale against the Astros. 2-0 on the top of the first, supposedly. I don't know what's going on here, but if you go to your Twitter feed, like, your pinned tweet is actually like, you know what, guys? Like, it was like in June, you were like, what is the that GIF. It's like, all right, bring on all the heat. Like, do you just feel like there's just overwhelming attention on the A's new stadium situation? You know, so, and for people,
I really don't feel like there should be more. I'm doing this. I mean, honestly, I've been following this so closely, every twist and turn, for well over a decade now. And I'm seeing so much happening that is either under the radar, misunderstood. It's just a convoluted mess. And I'm just kind of started thinking, I can't just sit here quietly and just let the A's leave. And not that I'd have any power over that. Obviously I don't, but I want to make sure that everybody is held accountable. And so I just started like, you know what, I'm just going to make this my focus. On my own. I mean, I obviously have a million other things to do right now. It's the NBA finals. That's on ABC7, and we're doing a ton of work on that, but I'm making it my own kind of like personal coverage mission to stay on this, because, you know, I'm starting to talk to more and more people. And the more people I talk to, the more people start reaching out. And it's just behind the scenes, there's a lot of conversations going on. And so I'm trying to, in some way, just make sure everybody knows what's happening and that everybody's accountable, because there's so many moving parts in this scenario.
It's crazy. Yeah.
It's just nuts. It really is.
Yeah. There's so many invested parties, and were you able to, did you stay on the whole 6.5 hour deal yesterday? Dude, so did I. I'm like, I missed like, I think 7 or 8 minutes of the whole thing, but I was like, Jesus Christ. Yeah. That was, I'm like naive. I'm like stepping into these public meetings for the first, like, this is my second public meeting. And both of them have been over 6 hours. So I don't know what it's like normally, but it has been, I did this one on the June 15th Alameda County meeting. And what's like your main takeaway from yesterday's meeting? I know there was a lot said, I know there was a whole bunch going on, but I mean, what was like your overall takeaway from that exchange, you know?
My main takeaway is that there needs to be more communication. That's kind of been my takeaway this whole time. I feel like the A's are talking to the mayor and the city council are really not on the same page. By extension, the A's and the city council aren't on the same page. Then the city's bringing in the county and they're not on the same page with the A's or the city. And it's like, the more these meetings happen, the better off everybody is, I think, as chippy as they can seem sometimes, because at least progress is being made. You looked at that Alameda County meeting with the Board of Supervisors, and it started off like a full-blown war. I was like, this is not going to go well. But by the end, after the presentation, you know, all the supervisors were basically lining up almost ready to vote before they decided they wanted to do their due diligence, which is a smart move, and get more information. The recent city council meeting that just happened, sort of a different story. We had the same kind of like front loaded posturing. Like, we like have to dig our heels in. Yeah, yeah, standoffish, because they really do need to do that in a negotiation. Yeah. But by the end, I didn't feel as good as I felt about the Alameda County meeting. Yeah. I still think there's a deal to be done here, but there's three huge roadblocks, and we can go over all those if you want.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah, we get this is a podcast. This is what we're here for. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to lead the conversation.
I want to know. That's why I interviewed you. Yeah, that,
but you know,
I
the hear three things. If I had to go three things, you know, the first one is that offsite IFD. That's the London Square area. If you've seen the term sheet, it's the big red area that covers London Square outside of the ballpark. That's a big problem. I don't think it's happening. And you know, city sources I had talked to before all this really intimated that the offsite IFD was going to be a no-go. You know, when I talked to A's and Cavill, they say they need the offside IFD, the big Jack London Square area. I know this is really confusing. So that seems to be dead on arrival. I don't think it's happening. And so what that means for the overall deal remains to be seen. That the onsite, the whole Alameda County Board of Supervisors meeting was just about that onsite IFD for Howard Terminal. And pretty much unanimously, no matter who you talk to, they all seem to think that's a good idea. I think the Board of Supervisors everybody's County on board with sign on. I think they will. I think the city council's down with it. Everyone I talk to is cool with that. The A's obviously are down with it. So the big challenge is the offsite and then what that means, because the A's want, city wants the A's to build or not build, but like fund a bunch of infrastructure improvements, what the A's would call deferred maintenance on the offsite area. And a lot of that has to come off that offsite IFD, which is clearly not going to happen. So that's one. Yeah. Two is the non-relocation agreement, which I think is complete nonsense. The A's
I don't understand. 20 years. 20 years. It's like,
the
dude, you're building a new
stadium.
Yeah. And the lease term is for 60. And the lease term for the stadium is 66 years or something like that.
Yeah,
so it's
but you've got to consider the full build out of Howard Terminal is at least 15 years.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So 20 years, they're going to build Howard Terminal and leave in five. No. So I think that's going to be just give them that. But I asked Cavill about it the other day, and, you know, he says he does have to bring Major League Baseball in on that. I don't see any reason why they wouldn't do that. It's kind of just one of those things where they don't want to go into the city council meeting and just concede every single point.
That's what he said. He literally said that.
They can't go in and be like, okay, yeah, sure, you guys take everything you want. That's just not how negotiations work. But I think that one's the easiest one. And then the third one is going to be the situation with the affordable housing. And the A's wanted to get out of that. And that was a big no-no by city council. That was the feistiest moment of the whole thing. So, you know, what they're saying is we're going to come up with $450 million of community benefits in this project. And you guys can just do whatever you want with it. If that's affordable housing, cool. But the city's like, no, we need.
Yeah, that's like $10 million here. That's like $10 million a year for 45 years.
This is the
years.
Law. Yeah. So the city's obviously, that's a non-starter. I mean,
yeah, because they're trying to get a waiver, right? Like they're trying to get a waiver so they don't actually have to put in the low income housing, which is a standard that every other developer in the city is held to, right? Like that's
right? Yeah. You cannot put in the affordable housing, but you then have to pay, you know, a percentage. And I think it'll come out to like, it'll come out to like $75 million, which is, it's a tiny percentage of what this overall project would be. So while I think the A's are going to want to dig their heels in on that, I mean, if you and I are sitting here talking and the A's are walking out the door and it's because they didn't want to fund affordable housing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a death blow for the A's reputation.
Especially in the city like
everywhere. So that's not, I don't see it.
Yeah. Especially like in a city like Oakland right now, like the current just, you know, socioeconomic climate and just like the wealth gap just seems like it's growing here like crazy. Like, yeah, it's a bad look. And back to like Jack London Square IFD, because like in the A's initial term sheet, they're projecting like $1.4 billion in revenue. So that's like, that's a big chunk of money they got to look for somewhere else, you know? And it seems like Cavill and the A's are pretty steadfast on like, oh, we need the Jack London IFD to make this happen. But then city council's also Molly Mainbridge, the project manager, says something interesting about how something about like the IFD funds are actually connected to the general fund. I have to go back and I'm still in the middle of doing my research and going back and looking at everything.
The way I understand it, and we're sports guys, right?
No, yeah, I'm definitely jumping into
do what you're doing. Like, I'm talking to everybody smarter than me. I mean, really, I'm not that smart. I'm terrible at math. So I reach out to everybody I can possibly reach out to. I have a lot of conversations because I want to understand this to the fullest so I can actually talk about it and hold people to account. And what I understand about the offside IFD is, and I don't agree with this per se, but I'm also not like an economics person. Maybe we should get Hal on.
I've got to bring it back. Yeah.
Yeah, you've had him on. So you had Hal on before me. Come on. He was even making fun of me about that. So what my understanding is they see that area in the offside IFD is profitable. They think it's going to continue to go up. They think it's a valuable area and it's going to continue to be valuable. What they think is that it's going to only get like 5-6% more valuable with the stadium there. And I don't know how those numbers line up, because to me, you're telling me you're going to put 2.5 million more people a year into that area, and you're going to have residential down there and business.
And 80 days a year of concentrated people who are hungry and want to drink, you know?
And there's no parking, you know, it's like Oracle Park. It's like Chase Center. There's no parking. So when you go there, you're getting off BART and you're walking a mile through downtown, right through Jack London Square. These people are going to be stopping and patronizing the businesses the whole way through. It's going to be a party at Jack London Square every game day. So I think the revenue and the money that's going to be going to those businesses is going to be huge, but their calculations don't tell them that. So, I mean, I don't know how it could be 6%, frankly. I don't.
Yeah, because I think with the numbers they were saying the city is claiming, like, regardless, even if the stadium wasn't there, this would annual 6.4%. And then the A's are projecting 6.8%. So, I guess... Yeah, I think the big thing too is the geographical boundaries. The first they added that line through the Jack London Square IFD yesterday, and said, "Hey, this actually kind of contends with our already ongoing separate parallel downtown revital." I forget what they call it, like some sort of downtown revitalization project they already have going. So it's like, hey, we're already trying to do work here. It's like, maybe you can't claim, you know, just put the stadium here. I think
claim it's more all of it. That's the thing. They feel like they're doing like enough there. Yeah. Yeah. And they're saying you're going to put the stadium there and you're going to take all the profit from everything we're doing.
And then it's like a half mile down the road. Yeah. It's like a half mile down the road, like, you know, Revolution Beer or whatever. It's already been there for a while. Maybe if their thing goes up, like maybe the A should get a cut. So I think there's just some kind of like vague, like you said, there is going to be way more foot traffic, but how do you quantify that? So
yeah, and that's the biggest problem. It's like when it went back to the pizza analogy that Hal and Mayor Kaplan started, you know, and that's where I kind of jumped in and made that same point I just made to you. And she was saying it's like going from 10 pizzas to 11, except the A's want all the pizzas. And that's only at 9%. I just don't get it. But that being said, they feel that's a strong area and they feel like giving up the funds, the but for taxes from that area is going to hurt their general fund. And so, I mean, really, it's a non-starter in that way. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, unanimously, the onside IFD, I think, is going to be a winner. It's just how much can they now pull from that? And I think we got to look at the other side of this too, Alex, because what happens if the A's leave?
Yeah.
You know, the city can play hardball all they want, but they're going to have this massive plot of land at the Coliseum site with no major league team, which means the money there is gone. They're going to have the A's owning half that land, which means anything they want to do there could potentially be a huge roadblock. They're also going to have Howard Terminal, which is going to be impossible to develop. It's going to have sea level rise, all the challenges, all the environmental issues.
Yeah.
And so
that'd be a really bad chain reaction.
They're going to lose.
And just like the fans would lose their team.
Lose their team, but then they're going to lose the jobs that the Coliseum brings, and they're going to lose the community benefits that the A's currently provide, which I got the numbers on, it's in my phone, but I think it's something like $2 million a year plus jobs. So, I mean, that's stuff that the city will lose. So the city stands to benefit a lot from Howard Terminal and the revenue it will provide, but they also stand to lose a lot too if the A's leave. So I don't think that the A's are necessarily wrong in digging their heels in. And I don't necessarily think the city's wrong in digging their heels in, but if these guys can't find a middle ground and make this thing work, everyone loses, literally everyone loses. And think about this too. I'll make one last point.
Yeah.
If they go to Vegas, you know,
I think like Cavill's there, right? There.
No, I mean, he is. He said it on your podcast.
Yeah, he's there right now. Today and tomorrow.
But I mean, they move to Vegas, they have what? They're going to put a stadium somewhere, hopefully near the strip for them, but they're not going to have all the stuff that they would have here. You know, if they build here, they're going to get the housing, the commercial, they're going to make a ton of money. That's waterfront property they're going to control.
Yeah.
And they're going to have the Coliseum site, which they control. I mean, that is an astronomically valuable amount of land.
Yeah. Another thing too that I think is kind of getting tossed under the rug, and I keep forgetting to mention too, is like they're budgeting for a 3,500 seat like art center too. Like that could just totally, I mean, that could be totally red. Yeah. I mean, that would be really cool for just the city of Oakland to have like a legit state of the art performing arts center that is public and stuff. That would be really cool. I think that would be awesome for the city as well. You know, like people come down there for a, you know, a nice symphony or whatever, or, you know, a nice show, opera,
right on the water. I mean, honestly, I mean, why not? Yeah. To me, it's such a huge win-win for everybody. And going back to the very beginning of this saga, like the very beginning, I've always thought that Howard Terminal, when it became available, was the best site. I always thought that, but I also recognize there's major, major challenges. And I wasn't really sure they would ever pick that site, because while it has the potential to be absolutely the best, it also is the absolute hardest to make work.
Yeah.
And so I give them credit for going all in on the hardest site, because it would have been really easy to just say, all right, we're going to build the Coliseum, we're done.
They're going high risk, high reward. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, they're going high risk, high reward. I just hate the having no tightrope, Howard Terminal, or bust angle. I wish
that
the Coliseum could still be considered if Howard Terminal doesn't work and all resources are exhausted. But I mean, if I own the A's, I don't think I would want to build at the Coliseum site, frankly. You know, there's already a stadium that no one goes to. There are two pro sports teams have already left. It's not the most desirable place for a ballpark. And if it was, then why is everybody leaving? And if it was, why has nothing been built around there, even when there were three teams there? Nothing. I mean, I don't know if you're old enough to remember going to Malibu Grand Prix right next to the Coliseum. That's been a parking lot. Malibu Grand Prix right next to the Coliseum parking lot on the Hagenberger side. It was killer. It's gone. And it's been gone for a long time, and literally nothing has gone there. It's been gone so long, you don't even remember it.
But don't you think, like, if the A's made a, I know the whole Coliseum City thing was kind of kicked around 10, 15 years ago, but don't you feel like a development like that could help revitalize East Oakland and an area that needs needs a lot of investment? I mean, I know it would be a whole
But why can't that happen with Howard Terminal? That's my point.
No, yeah, for sure.
You know, build Howard Terminal, and then you do Coliseum City, because I think that's a killer place for housing.
Yeah.
You know, rezone it for housing, and you have all the, you know, you keep the arena, you have the open space, you put some businesses there.
Put a park there or something.
Yeah, the big park, the housing. I think that's a killer spot to revitalize East Oakland. Like, I'm all about that. Yeah. I just don't know that tearing down a stadium and putting a new one there is going to change anything that they have. And, you know, Cavill did make this one point that I did really agree with it. He said, we have to compete with the Giants in this market.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was at the Bay Bridge series, and you see the Giants ballpark. You know, you could build a brand new ballpark at the Coliseum site, but you're never going to be able to compete with that crown jewel on the water at Oracle Park, as much as I hate to say it.
Yeah.
You know, and then I lived in San Diego for college too. I went to junior college there, and Petco Park, I was there when it was built. I was there before it was built. I was at the very first game there, and Petco Park has just done so much for that spot. You look at Oracle Park, Petco Park, and you kind of dream about what Howard Terminal could be for Oakland. So
Yeah. I mean, I know like Laney College kind of got stopped before it did, but I would love like a downtown site. I think that would be really cool. I know there was talks about like Jerry Brown halted in Uptown, like kind of like there's like that park next to the Fox Theater or whatever. And I mean, I think that would be sick, like literally right downtown. But I mean,
that
seems like 20 years too late.
Absolutely is.
Downtown. But, yeah, I was going to say back to, I mean, Howard Terminal. Yeah, that'd be great. But like back to yesterday's meeting, though, did you I really like Carol Fife. She really impressed me with the way that she challenged Cavill. Do you feel like the public officials here are doing their due effort? I know a lot of it is them getting caught up to speed, first of all, but once they kind of get a feel for the situation, do you feel like they're asking the right questions?
In most regards, yes. I think there was a really funny moment with Noel Gayo, who represents the area where the Coliseum is, where he's like, how much are my taxes going to go up? And Molly Abram's like, well, do you live at Howard Terminal? I don't think anyone lives at Howard Terminal.
Yeah,
no,
like, are you, do you live in the parking lot? Like, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, no, that shows a basic lack of understanding. Yeah. And we're so far into this that you have to understand more about it. And even after that, he said, oh, okay, so Carroll's taxes are going to go up, talking about Fife. And no.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's like, he's like joking about it. It's like, no. Dude, like, yeah. Like,
that's not how it works.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to me, it shows a little bit of a lack of understanding. I mean, you had Dan Cobb, who was like, Cavall, is that how you say your name?
Yeah,
Cavall.
I thought that was...
And it's like, dude, you've been doing this for five plus years. How do you not even know how to say the guy's name?
I thought Cavill was calling him Calb on... I thought they were doing like a passive aggressive... Like, I thought Cavill actually knows his name was called him Calb instead of Cobb.
But I did learn... I've always remembered Cavill kind of like gavel.
Oh, yeah. He said...
But then Cavill said cavalier. And I thought, yeah, oh, that's easier.
I heard that too. Yeah. I was like, that's pretty funny. Yeah.
But those are just really stupid semantics and really meaningless points. But it's just strange to me. And to Fife, I think that she really, really dug her heels in on protecting the community and the community benefits. And
I think
really
that was the biggest sticking point.
They've held their feet to the fire because they think that all the money for the community in this project is coming out of the IFD funds, the but-for taxes. So they're saying you have a billionaire owner and your billionaire owner isn't investing any of his own money into the community. Shame.
Yeah.
But,
and he wouldn't answer that directly either. He was, sidestepping.
But let's look at it from the other side too here.
Yeah.
If the A's are giving you $450 million in community benefits, I don't care where they're coming from. I don't care that they're not coming directly from John Fisher's checkbook. Mm-hmm. Like, just get the money to the community. So I understand the protection level there. And yes, she absolutely has to ensure that they can't just say, we're going to give you $450 million. And then, oh, the project was too expensive. It was more expensive than we thought. Sorry, you get cut out. Like, that could happen. And she's protecting that, which is probably why she's really wanting to ensure that there's like a money directly from Fisher. I get that. But at the same time, let's not act like these funds exist otherwise, right? Yeah. Like, if they're coming from the project, they're still coming. That's still a good thing, right?
Yeah, it seemed like community benefits and affordable housing were like the two biggest sticking points. And then I also saw a lot of, concern about Chinatown too, that I hadn't seen before yesterday, that a lot of critics, consider Chinatown in all of this too, so. I mean, there's so many interested parties, dude. It's crazy. And then, of course,
we haven't even mentioned the port. Yeah.
Yeah. The port interests. It's like those guys are like lawyered up or like at least like PR'd up, like pretty good. Like they have their talking points. And like, I don't know. You hear that public comment period. It seems like a lot of them are East Oakland Stadium Alliance.
Exactly. No, I saw that too.
Influenced at least. It's like people, it seems like people are like reading off their scripts and stuff like that. So, I don't know. The A's have a lot of opposition to this. And you can just see Cavill be like, come on, can you just give me an answer? But it's like, dude, it's going to take a while. So I don't really know. I think one of my biggest takeaways is that the A's are super impatient. They want a July 20th thing and then they can start moving. But the city council's like, hey, we're still reviewing the 400 plus public comments from the EIR, which is still a draft, by the way. It probably won't even be finalized till October or November. So what are we doing? Alameda County says they want till at least September. So it's like, I don't know why Dave is like saying in 12 days or not, we're going to know our fate. It's like, dude, just wait like 3 months and a lot more things will be figured out,
Yeah. And they want to guarantee progress. They feel like they've been working on this for a long time.
I understand that too.
But like, it's not the city's fault. They failed at Peralta. That's not the city's fault.
I know.
I try to see it from both ends. And then I also try to see it from the port and that's a whole different animal. But to me, I just think that the date it means a lot, but it means very little. It's a non-binding vote. I think it's more of like a ceremonious thing. To me, it's non-binding. Check. So you can always change your mind, but what do they hate in politics more than anything? They hate flip-floppers, right? So if you vote yes and then you change your vote later, I mean, that's going to look really bad too.
Well, that's what the A's are like. The A's know that they can call it non-binding, but the public pressure will be and that's what the Alameda County talked about too. They were like, basically, once you make that vote, people are going to, hold you to that. And
even if you're the one person that changes it, you're going to get fire, big time fire. And so that's the thing. I think they're putting max pressure on that vote for that very reason.
Yeah.
I thought the relocation card, while extremely annoying and not rolled out properly in my mind, as people probably saw me comment many times on Twitter, I think that that was an ace they had up their sleeve all along. And I don't think they pulled that card because they don't want to be in Oakland. They pulled that card because they want to guarantee they can stay in Oakland. They're putting maximum pressure on because they want Howard Terminal. And, you know, I had the realization the other day, I was looking through the draft EIR, which you mentioned, which still needs to be certified, but it's like thousands and thousands and thousands of pages and covers every possible minuscule scenario you could think of. And you go, damn, like they really put their work in on this. So, you know, we've never gotten this far in the process. And so to me, I think they've shown enough that this isn't just posturing so that they can leave for Vegas and everybody will give them a pass. I think they've really, really tried genuinely to get this thing done. Mm-hmm. They've put in an insane amount of work. They've dug their heels in. I mean, they've walked away from projects with far less opposition. They walked away in Fremont based on barely anything. Mm-hmm. You know, Peralta, they chose probably a bit too soon, got shut down and were like, okay, bye.
I feel like they're kind of, it's like they just make up these fake deadlines. Cause I remember all of 2017 or 18, Cal was like, hey, by the end of the year, we're going to have our site picked out, whatever, whatever. And all they did was have a press release. It's not like they didn't, they were just like, we declare we're going to go to Peralta or whatever. It's not like they actually did it. Yeah. It's like, we declare bankruptcy.
I declare bankruptcy.
Yeah. That's what I felt like. I was like,
dude, we have like the same mind. It's like,
yeah, it's like team puts out press release. Like, great. Like, wow. Like, and now I just feel like it's just these deadlines. It's all these timelines. It's like you just say, oh, we're running out of time. It's like, well, this isn't just up to you. If you need cooperation, and they might need some more time. So
I'm going to play devil's advocate, though. I'll play devil's advocate, since I know we probably think the same. But 2024 is when their lease is up at the Coliseum. The A's have reached out to the JPA about extending the lease, and the JPA didn't even respond, according to them.
Oh, that's crazy. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So now you look at that and you go, well, 2024, we don't even know where we're going to play after that.
Yeah. But right? I feel like, I don't know who else is going to take over. I mean, I feel like they're like the only
thing. Think about it like this, you know, the African American Sports Entertainment Group, they're getting a vote on the 20th too about purchasing their half of the Coliseum site.
Yeah.
And the city council is very much in favor of that. And I know that Nate Miley is also in favor of that. And he helped sell the half to the A's. So let's say in 2024, you know, that group has their half of the property and they want to do something with it. Mm-hmm. And they can't develop this land they're buying because the A's want an extension for X amount of years. I mean, that's why I could see it's not a complete lock that it's just the simplest thing ever to go, sure, yeah, extend it all you want. I mean, because if some other group is buying half the site and they want to do something with that site they can't do with the A's playing there, then that becomes a problem. So I don't think it's quite as easy as just extending the lease. And the fact that they haven't responded is crazy.
Yeah, because that's what they've done for a while. It seems like they just kind of keep kicking the can down. They're like, oh, we'll just extend the lease like another 10 years or a few years or whatever.
And I don't think they want to do that. Now, the other question is, if they get this 20th thing and doesn't go well, and it's like, bye-bye, we're off to Vegas, could they get a stadium built by 2024? I don't think so.
Yeah,
I mean,
well, it's Vegas, you know, who knows?
It's possible.
Yeah, it's Vegas.
I mean, it'll get rammed right through the deal, but
I mean, they get casinos up in months, right? I don't know.
I guess so. But I mean, it's still, would they play at the AAA park there? I mean, what would they do? So
yeah,
I don't know that 2024 deadline they have in their mind is like super, super tight, but I think that's kind of where they're coming from in this. They're saying, if we don't get the approval and know we can stay here and build that goodwill at Howard Terminal and build that goodwill at the Coliseum and extend that lease, like, we got to go. Like, we got to build something and start playing in it by 2024. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where they're coming from. Whether or not that's a real threat or not remains to be seen.
For sure. Yeah. I know we could talk about this all day, but I think that's a pretty solid stopping point, dude.
I guess so.
Yeah. I mean, I know you got to head out of here pretty soon, but, and thank you so much for the technical help too. Casey's actually recorded this one, guys. Oh yeah. I tried to record it. It didn't work. So it's good to have Casey on here on the pod. Yeah.
We need to do episode 2, Alex. I'm going to start the pressure campaign right now.
We're just finishing the first one, dude.
We barely touched anything. We talked stadium. We didn't even get into anything.
I know, but I got to watch the game. Got to get my write-up out at some point today about yesterday's meeting. That's going to take me a few hours. So, you know how it is. Nonstop, nonstop grind, You got to be a dad and stuff,
I know. I got game two of the NBA Finals. I got to get to the office here in like an hour so I can put together that. So, busy times, man. I'm not sleeping a whole lot.
All right. Well, Casey, thank you so much, man. It's really great talking to you. I can talk to you all day. So thank you so much, dude. Appreciate it.
All right. Have a good one.